New Zealand's chief censor, David Shanks, has banned the 74-page manifesto written by Brenton Tarrant, the 28-year-old man who, well, in legalese, is accused of slaughtering 50 people. I don't think there's any doubt of the fact that he did it. 50 people at two mosques in the city of Christchurch. The ban was issued over the weekend. And what it means in practice is that if a law enforcement official happens to spot on your computer that you have this document on your computer, you could go to prison for up to 10 years. And if you, post the ban, send that document on to somebody who you know, who you believe might not have read it yet, then you could go to jail for 14 years. Jacques Rousseau is a lecturer in critical thinking and ethics at UCT. Jacques, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Can you make a case for this having been the right decision by Brenton, David Shanks to ban this document?
I think I can. I don't think I would necessarily be persuaded of victims and the families of victims, the families and friends of victims. And the idea that we're hoping to repeat or avoid repeat occurrences of the same thing. But I wouldn't find that kind of line persuasive because I don't see much strong evidence that what we read and video games, for example, violent video games, there isn't much good evidence that these things actually cause the behavior rather than being ways in which people who already have certain inclinations find ways to engage with them or get more information about them. But it doesn't seem to add a danger, a unique danger that doesn't already exist to have these things in circulation. So I'm not persuaded by the argument for banning it, no.
What would be your strongest argument for the dangers of banning it? If you ban it, you don't necessarily prevent a similar attack or prevent somebody starting to develop the sorts of thoughts which might lead to the kinds of action that Brenton Tarrant took. But if you do ban it, this is the clear and present danger of what you do. What's that argument?
Well, so these sorts of things result in potential unintended consequences. I mean, we can already, if ISPs were to cooperate, if net service providers were to cooperate, we could easily start tracking what people download in all sorts of ways in order to catch things like this banned book. So we are, in a sense, granting a permission for a nanny state, or a surveillance state, and there's a long-term danger in that, whereby people can decide that any particular thing, I mean, this is obviously a gross horror and outrage, and here we could be sympathetic, and it might sound callous to talk about this and think about it in some sort of long-term way, but we are opening a door through banning things like this to full-on surveillance and to perhaps arbitrary and less principled attempts at banning things just on the basis of whim or political favor or the sentiment of the day. So we shouldn't be confused by the pure outrage and wrongness of this case to allow for rules that could generalize a censorship and a control of information flow.
Is there any difference between this manifesto and Hitler's manifesto, Mein Kampf, other than the fact that at 47 pages, it's perhaps easier to read than Hitler's 700-odd page Mein Kampf? Because Mein Kampf is not banned in New Zealand. This is, so too is Islamic State propaganda. Is there any difference between those three?
I mean, so I haven't read the manifesto. I did read Mein Kampf many, many years ago, and hopefully this man is at least a better writer than Mr. Hitler was. But the difference I would say is that, so the interesting thing about Mein Kampf is that it was banned in Germany since the end of the war up until 2016, I believe it was. And that is also an interesting point to feed in back to the arguments in favor of banning. If we are going to ban, I think it's imperative that we should have some sort of revision of the ban at a later time. So Mein Kampf could be unbanned because it was now established to no longer be as sensitive or as much of a wound on the national psyche as it was in the aftermath of the war. And the same thing should apply here. But to answer your question more directly, I think the difference would be perhaps that this thing might be a more explicit, unambiguous call to violence in ways that Mein Kampf, in its convoluted prose and long-windedness at getting to whatever point it was trying to get to, wouldn't necessarily have been as instructive or as motivating a force as this short and presumably far more pointed and succinct manifesto would be.
Some of the people who've been arguing against its banning in New Zealand say that it must be read so one can see just how insane and convoluted and poorly thought out is his reasoning for what he did. We need to see his madness in its nakedness in order to understand it and reject it.
This is a very important point, because these sorts of horrible figures in our midst need to, in a sense, be demythologized. And seeing their insanity, or seeing their lack of moral clarity, and or seeing their moral bankruptcy and so forth, I think can be instructive to remind us that people are dysfunctional in various ways, and that we shouldn't make them into martyrs. We should treat them as broken individuals and be able to recognize them. And that's the second point, is that you might have in your community somebody who expresses similar sorts of sentiments, and that could be a warning sign to know just how bad these things can get. So knowing what this sort of character looks like and how they think and so forth, I think can be educational as well. We might not all want to go out there and read it, but I think that hiding it, A, can draw attention to it, as we, as South Africans, I think, can remember about banned books and how we struggled so hard to get hold of them, partly because they were banned, and the same thing with things like pornography in this country. So it can also cast a spotlight on these things, making people martyrs and wanting, making us want to go out and find them, which we wouldn't ordinarily have done.
Jacques Rousseau, thank you. Lecturer in Critical Thinking and Ethics at UCT.